This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Good morning and welcome to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University, where we wish you, from which we wish you, a happy new year. Good morning, I'm Jim Russ. Dr. Schertz is off today, and that means we have another edition of the Best of Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, and 1035 FM HD2. And as always, we start with a dive into the mailbag.
If you want to contact Tech Talk anytime during the week, you can email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And if you are on Skype listening on streaming audio stream over the internet right now, you can reach us on Skype, which is a voice over IP client. Just simply search for Tech Talk Radio. You can add that to your contact list. You click in there, make a free phone call, voice over IP phone call to Tech Talk Radio. It will automatically be forwarded to the studio.
Excellent. Now it's time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
We've got an email from John. Dear Tech Talk, it's New Year again. Another New Year.
Funny how that happens. Every 365 odd days.
And my wife has reminded me that I'm still in my old job. Now, I want to get into technology, and I've been talking about it for years, and I've never really gotten there. I want to know where to begin. Now, here's the problem. I look in the want ads, and it says that I need experience to get a job. But I can't get a job without experience. And so it becomes quite a...
conundrum?
Catch 22. Well, yeah. What should I do? Well, John, this is kind of a recurring theme on Tech Talk. I covered this earlier, and I think I'll just summarize what some of the things that we covered back in an April show here on Tech Talk. What you have to start doing is behaving like you are already an IT professional. Now, that means that you start doing things that an IT professional will do. For instance, if you want to become a truck driver, or say a bus driver, and you said, well, I can't become a bus driver because, well, I don't own a bus. And so you sit there, you don't drive, you don't do anything, you don't do any driving, you say, I want somebody to hire me and they teach me to be a bus driver. You're never going to get a job. You've got to somehow start doing something IT-like. Now, the easiest thing you can do, first of all, is you've got to start exercising your brain. You've got to start thinking like an IT professional. And you can read the industry rags. There are all sorts of, these are like magazines. These are the free magazines that they send out to all the industry professionals, like Information Security Magazine. You can get that at InfoSecurityMag.com. The CIO Magazine, you can get that at CIO.com. eWeek.com, Network Computing, NWC.com, Information Week, iWeek.com, Dr. Dobbs Journal, DDJ.com, PC Magazine, PCMag.com. All of these, you just start reading them and you begin to see where the field is moving, what people are interested in. It gives you something interesting to talk about when you're going for that job interview. If you're not reading the industry rags, you're going to be flat-footed. You're not going to know what people are up to.
You're going to say this.
That's right. Now, you want to also, the information technology arena is always driven by standards. Standards are the key. Everything has to be standardized because computers have to know what to expect, and if they get something they don't expect, they don't know what to do with it. So you have to have interface standards for everything. That means that the field doesn't really move quite as fast as people like to pretend. Well, let's say TCP/IP, the protocol on the Internet. That was developed the summer of 1973.
Right.
We're on version 4 now. They've been trying to launch version 6, which is a slightly improved variation of version 4 with bigger address space, better security, better encryption. But basically, it's the same basic idea. So, for instance, you'd want to know something. If you're going to want to get a network, you'd certainly want to know something about TCP/IP, Transition Control Protocol, Internet Protocol, which is the packet switching protocol on the Internet. That's all driven by a series of standards that have been defined by the Internet Engineering Task Force. This is a nonprofit organization. You can just go to their website, ietf.org. The World Wide Web webpage has all sorts of standards. The World Wide Web Consortium, w3c.org. The XML Industry Group. XML is the standards for exchanging data. You can find that at xml.org. NIST is the NIST IT lab that has all of our security standards. This is the NIST is a government lab, National Information Security Technology Laboratory, NIST. It's up in Gaithersburg, and you can go there at NIST.gov. You've got the 802 standards. These are all of the standards like Ethernet and all that. So I'll have a whole list of those list of standards groups.
This is all on
this will be
website.
On the, go to techtalkonline.com. I'll have all those listed after the show. The next thing you want to do in the area of behaving like a professional, you see, none of these things require a job, but they require a desire to learn.
Right.
And it's that desire to learn, that interest in learning, that the employers love to see. You want to join users groups. Now they've got Oracle users groups, the capital PC users groups. That would be Oracle users group is Virginia Oracle's user group is VOUG.org. The PC users group is CPCUG.org. That's a capital PC users group. There's a Washington Apple Pie. That's the, of course, the WAP.org. That's, of course, the the Mac, the Apple crew. There's the Washington Area Perl Mongers. Perl is a scripting language used in Unix and Linux. It's Perl Mongers is PM.org. You've got the Maryland Cold Fusion Users Group. That's actually a scripting language used for interactive websites. That would be EFUG-Maryland.org. I'll have all these on the website. You've got the DC Linux Users Group. You've got the Washington Area Capital Users Group. And so these are all users groups you can join. Now, the beauty of these users groups, you go there. You don't go there to get a job. You just go there to meet people, and they'll have projects. You volunteer for the projects. You get to meet people, work with people side by side who are in the technology arena. And guess what? They're going to start looking at you as part of them because you're there participating with them in these groups. You can also join some trade or professional associations like the IEEE Computer Society, Association for Computer Machinery, Free Software Foundation, DC Chapter of the Internet Society, Advanced Computing Systems Association, or the Network and Systems Professional Association. These are all trade and professional associations that meet on a regular basis, and they have seminars. You go to the seminars, you begin to see what's cutting edge on the thing. Now, if you're a woman, you're sort of got a special case because there are a lot of women in technology sites. Women like to help women because IT has sort of the reputation of being a man's field. It's that reputation is quickly being eroded away as women are more and more women are going to the IT area. But there's the Institute for Women in Technology. There's the Women in Technology group, womenintechnology.com. Women in Technology International, WITI.org. There's the Girl Geeks, girlgeeks.com. DC Web Women, dcwebwomen.org. These are all women's groups. You go there and you start meeting other women who will be very, very interested in helping you to see what is to help you get into the field and get started. The purpose of all of this research is to try to figure out where the field is going. You want to anticipate where the field is going to be going in the next year or two or 3 years, because that helps you decide what is worth learning. You want to have the long view on it.
And it moves so fast. You don't want to be left in the dust with any of this stuff.
Yeah, and you don't want to be left in the dust. Things do move fast, but you see, if you keep track of the standards and the trends, they don't move as fast as you think. It's sort of like if you look out of the windshield of a car, the horizon and you can see the road moving quite slowly, and so you can anticipate when a road is going to curve. But if you look out the side window, you see bushes and signs coming by so fast you can't keep up with it. If you're chasing the latest marketing buzz, you're looking out the side window, because the marketing buzz is just buzz. But if you're looking at the underlying standards and the underlying technology, it doesn't move that fast. I mean, normally Microsoft comes out with technology about 10 years after it's left the research labs. There's about a 10-year cycle. Like the Intel chip came out with a 32-bit Intel came out with a 32-bit processor back in 1985. Microsoft did not have a 32-bit operating system until 1995 with Windows 95. Everything is about a 10-year delay on Mike. So if you understand the underlying technology, you can get it. Now, the final thing and most important thing is, You want to start doing something.
Right.
You just don't want to sit home. You know, you're going to learn all this stuff. But you don't have to have a job to do it. You can actually do things in the IT industry at home quite easily. You can build a computer, for instance. That's not that hard. You basically pick up a motherboard, a hard drive, and a CD. You put the things together. These components are fairly easy to put together a computer these days, and you'll learn a lot about selecting the components, how the hardware fits together. It's not that hard. My son, when he got into the business, he's built about two or three computers, and he learned a lot just by ordering the pieces, putting them together. And he was surprised when he finally got all the pieces at the house. He put the thing together in just a few hours. It wasn't that difficult to do. Of course, they all had to work together. You may want to install multiple operating systems. You know, you've got your Windows, you've got Linux, and you might want to try Linux and try a dual boot system. You can download Linux free of charge. I mean, the latest version of Linux is really quite good. This Ubuntu version 7.1 is really made to be easy to install. It's got great graphics, easy to use. I mean, some of the geekier Linux people don't like it because it lets the unwashed masses into Linux. But I'll tell you, it is opening up the eyes of a lot of folks, and people are using it. So you can install Linux. You could talk about your, you know, what you've done with Linux. You could build a small website. It would be you can easily if you have an internet service provider, they give you web space. You could build a small website, play around with it. Many of the internet service providers give you a back-end a database called MySQL. You could actually build an interactive database. You might want to set up, if you want to do something more sophisticated, you could take a bunch of old computers that all your friends are getting ready to throw away. You can install Linux on them, hook them together with an Ethernet back-end, and you could make a Linux cluster. I mean, it would not be a super, you'd have old machines, but you could then talk about the experience that you had in building a Linux cluster. You can do all this without any money, really. It's not that hard. You could set up a MySQL database. This is an open source database. SQL stands for Structured Query Language. It's a free version. Oracle, of course, is a SQL database, but MySQL is free. You can download it. You can set it up. You can set up and configure your own MySQL database, and you can learn something about that. So you see, there's a lot of things that you can do without a job. You just have to do it.
Good morning and Happy New Year, and this is the Best of Tech Talk from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. The number to call us later for the pop quiz is 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333. Stand by for more of the Best of Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning and Happy New Year. Welcome back to the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, and 1035 FM HD2.
Profiles in IT.
And today we're going to talk about James T. Russell.
No relation. He has more letters in his last name than I do.
He invented the digital compact disc in the late 1960s. Now, Russell was born in Bremerton, Washington in 1931. Now, this guy just liked to tinker in the basement. At age six, he invented a remote control battleship with a storage chamber for his lunch.
This is a great idea.
It was a remote control battleship lunchbox. Anybody touches his lunch, boom.
He blows them up.
He went to work as a physicist. Oh, he got a Bachelor in Arts in Physics from Reed College in Portland, Oregon in 1953. You know, I love these physics guys.
Yeah.
If you notice this, I'm only...
I don't know why
that is. He went to work as a physicist in General Electric in Richland, Washington. He was among the first to use a color TV screen and a keyboard as the sole interface between the computer and the operator.
Hmm.
You know, that was a very innovative.
At least he had one. I didn't have a color TV till late in my childhood.
Now, this is quite something. He designed and built the first electron beam welder.
How did you stumble upon that?
I thought these were two people, because I thought surely the Russell T. The James T. Russell that did the CD disc would not have done the electron beam welder, but it was the same guy.
Yeah, well, the beam, I guess, would be used in reading the CD, not the same beam, obviously, but sort of the same principle.
It's similar, but they're using light instead of electrons.
Right.
Yeah. In 1965, he joined Battelle Memorial Institute's Pacific Northwest Laboratory in Richland, Washington, as senior scientist. Now, Russell was an avid music listener, and he was frustrated by the wear and tear suffered by his vinyl phonograph records. I mean, when you look back on it, wasn't that crude?
Yeah, it really was.
You know, they put the grooves right, they put the vibrations, the music vibrations right in the groove, and then you put up something physical on the grooves and you wear them out. So as you play your record, you're ruining it in the process of playing it.
Still sounds 100 times better than MP3s.
Well, we'll go into that later. Yeah. The reason is they just making the MP3s too small. They're not really making.
Yeah.
They're not.
That's
true. And of course, that was the old analog days.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, alone at home one Saturday, Russell began to... Of course,
there were probably a lot of those Saturdays.
Yeah. Russell began to sketch out a music recording system that could record and replay without physically contacting the recording medium, using only light.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think he made this point alone and at home on Saturday, probably so he could have more rights to the patent.
Exactly.
I'm thinking that he was saying, oh no, I didn't do that while I was working for Battelle. I did that home alone on Saturday. Now, he decided, he thought, why don't I try to represent music as a digital stream? And if he could represent binary zero and ones with dark and light areas, then the device could actually read sounds. It could, in fact, it could store any kind of information that you'd want. He was trying to get an analog of the old punch cards, which either had a hole or no hole.
Right.
I mean, you could do zeros or ones with the old punch card, really. So he said, could I have an optical equivalent of an old punch card? He originally was going to make this reader the shape of a sort of a rectangle that you could fit into your pocket. He was thinking of an optical punch card in the beginning, and that later on he said, well, why don't I make it round and let it spin like a record? So he made it more record-like later on, but in the beginning he was thinking of a form that would look more like a punch card. After he went back to Battelle, and they let him pursue the project, even though it was sort of a wild idea. This was back, you know, back before computers even were a very big thing. After years of work, Russell succeeded in inventing the first digital-to-optical recording playback system. It was patented in 1970. He found a way to record onto a photosensitive platter tiny bits of light and dark. In other words, it'd be holes or openings. 1 micron in diameter. A micron is 10 to the minus sixth meters. 1 micron in diameter, one millionth of a meter, 1 micron in diameter, and then the laser would shine onto that surface and it would read these tiny patterns, and a computer would be used to convert the data to an electronic signal, which would then be sent back and played over the speakers. This was the first compact disc. Now, He originally envisioned, as I said, a 3x5 stereo record that fit into a shirt pocket. Later on, he decided to shape it like the phonographic disc, which had been its inspiration. Through the 70s, Russell continued to define the CD ROM, read-only memory, as it became called later on, and to adapt it to any form of data. But his ideas were far ahead of the time, and really, not many people were interested in it, certainly no investors.
And he wasn't let down by the invention of the 8-track?
No.
Didn't that?
Finally, the 8-track, I guess in the beginning the 8-track was a serious competitor for him, but he finally overcame the 8-track challenge. Finally, Sony and other audio companies realized that this might be a good idea.
Yeah.
And they bought the license, not from Russell, but from Battelle.
Meaning he got the short end of the stick.
I think is the correct sign.
Now, Russell had earned 26 patents for CD-ROM technology while at Battelle, and you know how that works. The company you work for owns the patents.
Exactly.
Then he said, you know, there's something wrong with this. So he decided to form his own consulting company. Of course, after the CD had been released, he continued to create and patent improvements in optical storage systems, along with barcode scanners, liquid crystal shutters, and other industrial optical instruments. He's now working on a high-speed optical data recorder and player that has no moving parts. He's going to earn another 11 patents on that. So that there we have Russell, James T. Russell,
now,
the inventor of the CD.
It's funny. I've been able to track down that very first digital recording, and I'm going to play that for you right now.
Come over here, love me.
There it is.
That's it. That's the very first CD. No, it really wasn't the very first CD. We'll tell you what that was coming up. And along with playing the pop quiz, the number for you to call in order to participate this New Year's Day is 1-877-936-9333. 1-877-936-9333. You're listening to the best of Tech Talk, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz. Actually, it's none of the above, nor is it the doc, because it's New Year's Day, and of course, the doc is away, so I get to play. I'm Jim Russ, here with the pop quiz on the best of Tech Talk. If you were paying the least bit of attention, you would know that just mere moments ago, we were talking about James T. Russell, the guy who invented the compact disc. Well, he invented a lot of other stuff. So what was the first thing he invented? What was the first thing he invented as a kid? If you know the answer to that question, you need to call Andrew Mitchell right now. He's our diligent and studious phone screener. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. The winner gets lunch for two at the Escoffier at Stratford University. That's in Falls Church. Or Cafe Kareem That's at the Woodbridge location. I'm still upset that I was not the namesake of the Woodbridge location cafe. We'd like to also thank at this time our winner on Christmas Day, Jim Kimball from Vienna, Virginia. He called and got the right answer to the pop quiz on Christmas when there was nobody here except for Andrew. So we're going to continue on while the phones ring. We've got more about CDs here on the Best of Tech Talk.
Just finished talking about the CD and how the CD could be used to record audio files in a digital format. Now, in order to take an analog signal and convert it to digital, it does take some planning and some structure.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you have to sample the analog signal. An analog signal is a continuous wave, and you have to sample it periodically and figure out what the value is at that sample rate. Now, you have to sample it. There's something called the Nyquist limit. Now, in order, the Nyquist limit is what is the maximum frequency that you can reproduce at a certain sampling rate. And it turns out that if you want to produce a, reproduce a frequency of 20 kilohertz, which is about the highest frequency that the human ear can hear, you have to sample it at twice that rate in order to not be limited by the Nyquist limit. So you have to sample it at least 40,000 kilohertz or 40,000 hertz, 40,000 times a second in order to do that. Now the actual CD wants to be just a little bit above that Nyquist limit, so they sample at 44.1 kilohertz is the sampling rate of a CD. Each time they sample the signal, they sample the analog data stream, then 44,000 times a second.
Mm.
And each time they sample it, they digitize that signal using a 16-bit word, which means they can digitize it to about 65,000 levels. A 16-bit word has about 65,000 levels. So if you take the data stream from a CD, it's 44.1 kilohertz times 2 bits per sample, or 16 bits, and that gives you the bit rate. Now, what is happening with MP3s is they don't want the MP3 file to be so big, so they sample it at a lower rate. They have a smaller word, and they have less resolution. And so many MP3s, when you listen to them, they really are not CD quality, because they'd just be too big if they were.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have a good ear can frequently hear that.
Of course they can. And that's kind of a defeating point to this whole thing, I would think, isn't it? I mean, the whole part of the point of the CD was to get better audio quality.
To get better audio quality, and what the MP3 does, just to sort of a sidetrack, the MP3 is a lossy data compression, and when they developed it, they had people listening to it, and they say, well, I don't think most people could hear the cymbal, playing just at the moment that the drums were going off. So then they get rid of the cymbal sounds during the drum period. And so they go in and they selectively remove features that most people can't hear. And they were to have people listen to the MP3 say, oh yeah, that sounds the same to me. But
it's not really.
It was not really the same. And so it's a lossy compression, and it really depends on audio perception. And some people with better perception, it bothers them more than others.
Yeah,
that's right.
To the discerning ear, it's very noticeable, the difference between.
And we've talked about this in previous shows. The world's first CD was manufactured by Philips in August of 1982. And everybody, it was this group. Is it that right, Dr. Church?
That's right. That is the group. That was the first commercial CD that came out. See, now that came out in 1982.
What a waste.
And look at this. The original patent for the CD was in 1970. The first commercial was 1982. That's that 10-year delay.
So I was going to say, that bears out what you said in the last segment, that technology moves, it seems, in 10-year increments.
That's right. It takes about 10 years to go from the research lab to production.
And we have technology to thank for this.
Jim, you are a dancing queen.
No, I'm not. This is the Best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We will be back with more right after this.
When the bells all ring and the horns all blow and the couples we know are fondly kissing, will I be with you? Or will I be among the missing?
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. This is the best of Tech Talk this New Year's morning. I am Jim Russ sitting in for Dr. Richard Schertz, who is no doubt sleeping in this morning, and good for him. So we go back to the best of Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio.
MIT Technology Review came out with their year in review in hardware. And I like to see what MIT likes to do, because these are a good technical bunch, and they've got their handle on the research directions as well as what's selling. They said the big thing in hardware this year, touch screens.
Yeah,
we're familiar with the touch screens. Of course, that's what made Apple's iPhone such a big thing. The was an iPhone and iPod with a touch screen interface that was really quite innovative, and people just love it. Now, have you ever seen Microsoft's multi-touch computer table? Have you seen ads of it? You sit there, and it's a big screen on a table.
On a table.
And you'll put your digital pictures there, and you'll see your pictures displayed on the tabletop. You can put your finger on one, and you can shuffle them around like they're paper.
Oh, that's cool.
Then if you, say, want to store one of the pictures in, say, your PDA, you put your PDA in this little circle on the phone, and you just take the picture and drag it over to your PDA, and it goes right in there.
That's amazing.
Then if you want to go, if you say, oh, I wonder, then you can connect to Google Earth, or you can go to Yahoo Maps, and then you can map where you're going to go. And so it actually is just a table for sitting around and manipulating digital items as though they were paper.
Well, it works in reverse. So you've got a digital camera. Can you put it in the circle and take the pictures off of the camera or the phone and then look at them on the table?
Yeah, you can do that.
How does that even work?
That's amazing.
You just, I mean, it just, it, it, I don't, it's got the software in the, it's just a display with a Wi-Fi interface for the device. But then it has all the software in the back to display these multiple images, and so we're getting more and more sophisticated touchscreens and back end software that are sort of reducing the barrier between the user and the computer.
It's any idea how much this thing costs?
No, it's just been in development. I tell you,
it's not out there on the market yet.
I haven't seen it on the marketplace. You know, I don't know. I think it's multiple thousands, though.
It's, you know, you really got to be into pictures to get something.
Now,
like
Perceptive Pixel came up with a touch screen wall, which they use for displays, and I've seen this guy doing some presentations on it where you touch it, and if you want to say. He might have a view of the a satellite view, and he wants to sort of zoom in. He just takes two fingers, puts them right beside each other, and he moves them apart. And as he moves them apart, the image zooms in that area. So he can manipulate the image as he's talking, and it made for a really, really impressive interplay. So number one thing on MIT's technology is touchscreens. Now, the second thing was research on tactile feedback. They said people like to have feedback when they're tapping something. Like, see, one thing that they didn't like, say, with the iPhone, it doesn't click. Right. And people like to have a click. They
sure.
like to feel. So now there's been a lot of research on tactile feedback where you actually, where it's in the smooth screen, you can hear a button click, you get a feedback. There's also, people want to make virtual reality real. This is called, the area of haptics. And what they do, they actually have vests that have water in them. So when you play video games and you get hit, you feel something.
That's interesting.
So there's been, and there are many other applications for tactile feedback that we really don't want to get into on Tech Talk that
yeah.
you can imagine.
Oh, brother. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
They are covered. They are covered on the MIT Technology Year in Review, but, you know.
So you can go there and take a look at it.
You can certainly take a look at it.
And then you can go to Tech Talk and download this music.
That's right.
So that you can play
it. Time video on the website, Doc.
Do you get our picture here?
Now, this was also the year of context-aware gadgets. This is where the gadget knows where it is. You know, people have got laptops, have got phones, and Nokia introduced a powerful PC tablet with a GPS chip built right in. You know, my phone's got GPS built into the thing. And so Google recently announced a technology that allows somebody to locate themselves on a map using just their cell phone by triangulating with the cell phone tower.
So this will help people who can't find their you-know-what from first base, right?
Yes.
Well, no, what they're trying to do by having context-aware gadgets, because now the technology is out there. For instance, you've got your cell phone. It knows where you're located. And you say, you know, I'd like a Domino's pizza. Mm-hmm. You just type in Domino's. It knows where you are, and it gives you walking directions to the nearest Domino's pizza or driving directions.
You know what I used yesterday? We talked about this on a previous show. I used the Google 411.
Oh, yeah.
I was on the road coming back from Boston to here with my daughter, and I was looking for a pizza place in Trenton, New Jersey, I heard uh-huh. about, and we used that. I couldn't remember the name. I just used the Google 411 dial-up thing and said pizza, and sure enough, it was the first place.
See,
isn't that amazing?
They probably must have had context aware. They knew where your cell phone was located.
I dialed Google. They ask you for the place, the area.
Okay.
So I told them Trenton, New Jersey, and then just said pizza. And they gave me eight pizza places, and the first one was the right place.
But now what Google is doing, they're going to get location information from your cell phone. That'll be the next thing, and you won't have
to say
where.
You won't have to say Trenton, New Jersey.
No, it'll just put it where
you
are.
I really didn't
want
to say Trenton, New Jersey.
I know.
But
I've got to tell you.
How was the pizza, by the way?
It was great. It was an excellent place.
Cool.
I tell you, I normally avoid Trenton, New Jersey, to tell you the truth.
Well, if I hadn't been driving back to D.C. from Boston, we wouldn't have gone through.
Now, it's a great town. Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Now, the next area in the MIT's technology year in review. I used to go to Camden a lot in my former life doing, that's where... RCA,
your former life?
Yeah, RCA Research Labs was up there. Not that former life. I was a research physicist.
That's a future life.
That's right. No, the next thing in the technology year in review for hardware are the brain-computer interfaces that are coming along. Emotive is developing a wireless electro... encephalograph cap, an EEG cap for gamers. You put this cap on, and you think about what you want to do, and the game will respond.
This sounds dangerous.
What the heck?
Another company, M-Sense, believes that EEG technology can be used to help it collect better marketing research about how people respond to advertisements, video games, political speeches.
Is this like that helmet that they developed for that game that everyone's talking about, Halo 3?
I think this would get the average American in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
It's a Microsoft researcher, Desney Tang, is leveraging EED in a different way. He's using it to collect people's subconscious responses to pictures in order to try to teach computers to recognize certain types of images. So this brain-computer interface, I tell you, this technology is going to be a huge thing for paraplegics in the medical area.
Yeah.
This is going to be a major development, and they're on the verge of getting some very, very significant results.
You mean
here.
Technology can be used for good and positive things?
Yeah, it can be. So
as well as evil.
Who could have thunk it?
Well as evil, yes.
Now, the next thing that they talked about, see, now we always have the evil force to balance the good.
The evil force is sitting in the corner over there, monitoring the forum.
Yeah, keeping that form
clean.
That was
sort of the idea originally, but it didn't work out that way.
Now, the next thing that, and you do know, are the multi-core computers. It used to be we were just happy with, you know, Pentiums and, you know, all this. And then they have the dual core, where you basically put two computers on the same chip, and they can talk together very quickly. And the dual-core technology, basically, if you can split the code up, it allows you to do things twice as fast. We've got to rewrite it to take advantage of the dual-core. Certain gamers love the dual core because you could have, say, one core managing the graphics and another core managing the other things, and so it allowed for gaming just coming along. And then, of course, at the latter part of the year, we had the quad core. Both AMD and Intel are coming out with the quad core, the four core chips. This basically is going to make computation very, very quick in the future. It's going to, as you know, the price of integrated circuits drops. We're going to get more and more cores. So that was a big development this year. Now we've got to write the software to support the multi-core chips. And the last thing on their technology year in review was autonomous vehicles. And they were referencing the tremendous advances in autonomous vehicles. And, of course, each year, DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, has a robotic car competition. Now, 2 years ago, DARPA put on the Grand Challenge, and cars had to drive for miles on an empty desert road. And honestly, they had trouble doing it. I mean, mm-hmm. they went over, they put like rocks and obstacles there, but it wasn't that much. This year, the Urban Challenge, the cars, the autonomous vehicles, had to obey traffic laws, had to interact with other cars on the road, including other robotic cars. Some of the cars were driven by people. And they did amazingly well. There were four finishers to this thing that did really well. In the end, the vehicle from Carnegie Mellon, which is up at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, completed the race the fastest with the most sensible driving methods of any of the six that crossed the finish line. Stanford came in second, and of course, our own Virginia Tech's entry was awarded third place. So that's the MIT's technology year in review.
You know, autonomous vehicles, as badly as a lot of people drive, I don't know. Naveed and I kind of weighed in on this last week.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
Not a big fan.
So you wouldn't want to just have an autonomous vehicle take you to work.
I drive because I like to drive a car.
Also, yeah. I mean, I don't want my driving data gathered on it. I mean, who knows what that could be used for? I mean, you go to court and they can just pull something off your car and say, no, this is what you
this
were
is
doing.
Where you really were. Well, if you weren't doing anything wrong, Naveed, you'd have nothing to hide.
On the other hand, if you had a bunch of improvised explosive devices along the road,
hey now,
would you like to be sitting in your car? Or would you like to have an autonomous vehicle take you through? You know, there are times when an autonomous vehicle is certainly the preferred option.
Yeah, but I don't live in Baghdad, so but again, as Naveed pointed out last week, what is it that the all robots will grow up to learn to hate and kill their master?
Crush, kill, destroy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Now let's talk about predictions that proved false. We've talked about phrases that you never expected to be saying,
right?
Because technology is moving so fast, but there are also predictions that never came true, and it's kind of fun to look back into the past to see what some of the predictions were. For instance, Ken Olson, who was the president, chairman, and founder of Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC, and makers of big business mainframe computers, back in 1977 said, "There's no reason that anyone would ever want a computer in their home."
Yeah.
Well, Ken, that's really right on the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, back in the early 90s or late 80s, Bill Gates said, "We will never make a 32-bit operating system."
Okay.
And, of course, Windows 95 was the first 32-bit operating system that they came out with. They eventually did. Okay, now this one, T. Craven, who was the FCC commissioner in 1961, he made this prediction regarding satellite communication. There's practically no chance that communication space satellites will be used to provide better telephone, telegraph, television, or radio service inside the United States.
Go!
Now, there's an FCC chairman that's really on top of it.
Yep, mm-hmm.
4 years later, the first commercial communication satellite was launched. Now, how about this? In a memo at Western Union in 1878, this was the prediction. This telephone has too many shortcomings to be seriously considered as a means of communication. The device is inherently no value to us. Okay, obviously Western Union made a bad prediction there.
Yep.
How about this IBM prediction? The world market potential for copying machines is 5,000 at most.
We have 5,000 in this building.
That's when IBM was telling Xerox that they were just out to lunch. It was a bad business model. There'd be no demand for their machines.
Mm.
How about the 1980s campaign by the by BPI, which was the arm which is trying to enforce royalties for the music industry? They're saying home taping is killing the music business. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Home taping is killing. Okay, Mary Somerville, pioneer in radio. Educational broadcast. She said, television won't last. It's a flash in the pan.
Of course it is.
Back in 1948. Well, Mary.
That's why we're on the radio.
Mary, it didn't really work out very well. Okay, now David Sarnoff, made a prediction in 1921. He said, the wireless music box, which I guess is really the radio.
Probably so.
The wireless music box has no imaginable commercial value.
Would you pass me the wireless music box, please?
Who would pay for a message sent to no one in particular?
I don't know.
Okay, now this is my favorite prediction that never came true. This was made by Alex Loit. President of the vacuum cleaner company, Loit Corporation. He made this prediction in 1955. Nuclear-powered vacuum cleaners will probably be a reality in 10 years.
You know, that's technology we just don't need in everybody's hands.
That's right. Yeah. You know, everybody that owned a nuclear-powered vacuum cleaner, well, they all died. They're all dead now.
Who needs a nuclear-powered vacuum cleaner?
If you're making
those hover cars that take us from place to place nowadays. Yeah.
If you're making that big a mess, there's something really wrong with you. You need a nuclear-powered vacuum cleaner.
Now, Lord Kelvin, who was a well-known scientist in Britain, he was a British mathematician and physicist, and president of the British Royal Society in 1895 said, heavier-than-air flying machines are impossible.
Isn't there a unit of measurement or something named after
him? Yeah, the Kelvin.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly the Kelvin. Yeah. And now, this was a prediction made by Michigan Savings Bank when they were advising Henry Ford's lawyer not to invest in the Ford Motor Company. They said, horses are here to stay, but the automobile is only a novelty of fad. So Henry Ford's lawyer did not invest in Ford Motor Company, and he protected himself. He probably bought a horse with that investment.
Of course, that's right. Interesting topic
so
there.
So all of these things indicate, you know, that technology is hard to predict. It's hard to predict where it's going. And, you know, from the phrases that we talked about earlier, technology is moving fairly quickly. And so people, because of the constant move of technology, the stress of always having to figure out the latest DVD player, the latest VCR, people suffer from techno stress.
Yeah. You are listening to the best of Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. We'll be right back right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University for the best of Tech Talk. And now we venture into the kitchen.
If we look at culinary traditions that came from Europe, there are certain trends you can see. You, of course, since France always had bad meats, they like to use heavy sauces to cover the flavor of the meat.
Or the rottenness of the meat.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, France is known for the smother sauces. I mean the mother sauces. And if you go to Italy uses much finer use of sauces. They allow the flavor of the meat to come out because, of course, Italy had much better meat. So, you know, you go to...
Why is that?
Better food, period.
I don't know why they had better meats down there. Mm-hmm. You know, I really... That's a very good question, but they did have better meat. I don't know why.
Italian cooking just seems to be better for you anyway.
It turned out, you know, we always think of, you know, the fine dining coming from France, but actually it started out, in Italy. There, you know, the culinary traditions and uses of sauces and all really started in Italy. That Italy preceded France in sort of the culinary arena, but much of the culinary traditions of Italy moved to France in the 16th century. There was a woman by the name of Catherine de' Medici. She was niece of the magnificent Medici.
Was he a magician or something?
No.
He had a show on the road?
No, he was just rich.
Oh, okay.
He was just rich. He was one of the rich guys in Florence. They were a banking family in mm-hmm. Florence or in the Tuscany region of Italy.
El Magnifico de Medici.
Yes. Uh-huh. And she was married off at age 14 to Henry of Orleans.
Yikes, there are laws against that.
He was the future Henry II. She was married in 1533. But when she moved to France, she took with her a multitude of cooks and their helpers to Paris. And those cooks and helpers carried the Italian culinary cuisine to France, and as Italy likes to say, France copied it. Now, the guy, Gustave Escoffier, we've named our Escoffier dining room at Stratford University after him. He was actually one of the famous French chefs, and he developed sort of the first methods to make cooking occur faster, sort of way to accelerate cooking, and he developed something called the mother sauces. Yeah, the first fast food.
The Big Mac.
He developed the first fast food techniques in France, and see, always before, people made all their sauces from scratch, and of course, the French sauce, you got to boil meat, it takes forever. Yeah. And so he said, why don't we make some basic sauces, and we'll have those available, and we can just add seasoning to them, and so we'll have these base sauces, and then we'll make variations of them. And so the base sauces were called the mother sauces. So Escoffier developed his classification of the five mother sauces: bechamel, velouté, hollandaise, espagnole, and tomato. These were the five sauces that Escoffier first came up with. Bechamel, it's a classic white sauce. It was named after its inventor, Louis the 14th Steward, Louis de Bechamel. It's the king of all sauces and referred to as a cream sauce. It's made by stirring milk into butter, flour, roux.
Mm-hmm.
Velouté is just a white sauce. It's made from chicken or veal or fish stock, and it's basically thickened. Espagnole is a brown sauce. It's made from meat stock and a mirepoix of brown vegetables, such as diced onions, carrots, or celery, and it's in a nicely browned roux. Hollandaise sauce is an emulsion of egg yolk and fat. Hollandaise is made with butter, egg yolk, and lemon juice, usually in a double broiler to prevent overheating. It's used as a base for mixtures such as tartar sauce, Thousand Island dressings. Tomato sauce is pretty much self-explanatory. You just cook the tomatoes and make tomato sauce. Now, some chefs like to add a sixth sauce to the mother sauce list. This was not officially on Escoffier. Vinaigrette. It's the sixth sauce. Vinaigrette's made from a simple blend of oil, vinegar, salt, and pepper.
And finally, this from the best of Tech Talk.
Bonjour. My name is Sherry. I live in Paris, France, and listen to Tech Talk via podcast. So great, we have got an overseas Tech Talk listener. I have a seasonal food science question for you. What makes the bubbles in champagne? How is it that they seem to come out of nowhere? How is it the bubbles never seem to stop? Why does this work better in a fluted glass rather than any other type of barware? Obviously, Cherie has been doing research.
She's been dipping into the booze, I think.
That's right. Best regards and Happy New Year from your biggest fan across the pond, Cherie.
But wait, there's more.
I know.
Isn't there more? You're not going to read that on the air.
Okay, no, we can't read that on the air.
Oh, sure you can.
Okay, by the way, you guys have the sexiest voices of any announcers on federal news radio. Whoa!
Hello!
Are you as hot as you sound? May we get autographed pictures? Hey, is federal news radio sending out autographed pictures of the Tech Talk
only
boys?
Only if we're taking them, I guess.
Well, Cherie, you know, bubbles in champagne are an interesting question.
Yes,
they actually are dissolved carbon dioxide gas, which is coming out of the liquid. Now, it turns out they start out as strings of bubbles that rise in pairs, and they gradually transition to bubbles in groups of three or so, and then they finally settle down to a pattern of regularly spaced individual bubbles. Now, it turns out that these bubbles arise from nucleation points on the glass wall.
See,
that's why imperfections in the glass wall. That's why the fluted glass tends to be a little bit better, because it has more imperfections around those creases. Now, the nucleation points are small defects in the glass that trap vibrating pockets of carbon dioxide. Dissolved gases in the champagne gradually collect in the vibrating bubbles inside the defect, causing it to grow and soon expel gas from the defect. And so it starts out there, and then you see a string of them, and gradually they start coming out
everywhere. And that's why they just keep going and going and going.
That's right. There's a lot of research on, looking at bubbles coming out of dissolved gases, because nitrogen bubbles that grow in blood vessels cause the bends. So they want to study a nucleation of this sort of dissolved gases coming out of a liquid. But that was an excellent question, Cherie. And I'm telling you, I spent a lot of time watching those bubbles.
I bet you did.
And so I did a lot of research that over this last New Year's.
I spent a little bit of time myself doing just the same thing.
That's right, and they're still looking at bubbles.
All right, that's the best Tech Talk for this week. We'll be back next week with a new show. Stay with us here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2 for Tech Talk Radio.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
In the beloved fairy tale classic, Beauty and the Beast, Belle is imprisoned in the castle of a mysterious beast. But with the assistance of the castle's enchanted staff, the two become unlikely friends, discover that true beauty is found within, and they live happily ever after.
Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now more than ever, it's time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. Do things like eat dinner together, add fruits and veggies to every meal, save treats for special occasions, and get up and play an hour each day. Be our guest to healthy living and visit letsmove.gov to learn more. That's letsmove.gov. This message has been brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
The American Legion. We're a powerful force for the nation. We pledge ourselves to our veterans, our youth, a strong national defense, and Americanism. These four pillars shape our work and what we do for America. We work relentlessly within our four pillars of service, and we succeed. As the largest veterans organization in the nation, we have the numbers and power to influence our leaders in Washington, D.C. to enact laws that make sense for America. and to make sure our veterans receive the care and benefits they have earned and have been promised. And we have over 14,000 American Legion posts, sponsoring youth programs and promoting patriotism and American values all across this great country. We're proud of our service to our country in uniform during times of war, and we're honored to continue to serve through our membership in the American Legion. Go to legion.org to find out more about the American Legion's commitment of service to America.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that are hopefully designed to